There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Daisy is Careering. I'm Daisy Buchanan and this podcast is inspired by my brand new novel, Careering. It's a story about the complicated relationship between ambition and anxiety and what to do when you think your job might be the love of your life, but it's never going to love you back. Every episode, I'm going to be talking to a special guest about their own relationship with what they do for a living, how they've navigated the emotional highs and lows of their career, and how we can find a place for ourselves in a world where there is relentless outside pressure to succeed. How can we work on our own terms, and can we make work work for us? In our final episode, I'm talking to the best-selling author, activist, podcaster, and journalist, Bryony Gordon. For a long time, Bryony has been one of The Telegraph's leading writers, and she became a household name with her beloved memoirs, from her hilarious, raw and moving debut, The Wrong Knickers, to her latest guide to managing mental health, No Such Thing as Normal. Bryony opens up about her alcoholism and how she used work as a way to legitimise her addiction, as well as exploring her very complicated relationship with social media and how we can work out ways to navigate our need for validation. We also talk about marine biology at length. I really hope you enjoy this one. So, Bryony, the first thing I'd like to ask is, what did you want to be when you were growing up?
Oh, that's a very good question. Okay, I always loved writing, but I really wanted to be either, well, there were a few things that I wanted to be. I wanted to be an astronaut at one point, but that was kind of short-lived when I realised what it would involve. And then I wanted to be a marine biologist. I'm obsessed with creatures of the sea. And then I also wanted to play football for Arsenal. But that was short-lived as well when I realised it would involve being good at playing football.
I am loving the breadth of this. And I wonder whether being a writer sort of, it's the best thing if you want to live all of those different lives.
Well, yeah, I guess it is. And I guess that's what journalism, you know, for me was like every day I would wake up and I would go to work and it would be like, what, you know, who am I getting to meet today? Who am I getting to, you know, find out whose life am I going to find out about? But I still, you know, sometimes I wonder whether it's really interesting. Like I'm 41 now and I think, how could I, like the sort of sea really calls to me and I think, how can I make that work? How could I combine careers of writing and marine biology together? I haven't quite worked that one up yet, Daisy, but you know, I'll let you know if I do.
Oh, please do. I love that. That is a very exciting idea. It's something I'd love to revisit about sort of career changes. Because one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you is you do so many different things brilliantly. And obviously, I think ultimately it's all kind of, you know, writing and connecting with people. But there are many, many hats that you wear. If it's all right, I'd love to talk about how you got into journalism and also from reading your books, because I remember, you know, reading your columns and sort of admiring, you know, you from afar and your fabulous work and your really exciting life and, you know, going off and interviewing pop stars and flying everywhere. You know, I know from what you've written and what you've shared since that you were kind of living two lives and sort of struggling, you know, issues of mental illness and addiction while having this like incredible sort of glossy exterior where everyone wanted to be you.
Did they? I don't know. Like, I tell you what, like your book, oh my God, it just spoke to me, Daisy, so much. You know, I felt both of those characters, I felt what they were experiencing, you know, in the work as a sort of substitute for self-esteem. So thank you for writing it, just to start. So I, you know, like, I always feel a bit, I always feel a lot of shame about how I got into my job, because my, it, you know, essentially nepotism. So my, you know, and that word is sort of like, but it was my, my whole family are writers and journalists. And I knew from a very young age, and I remember when I was coming up to finishing my A-levels, and there was all this sort of talk about, well, you go to university, do you want to take a year out in between? And I really wanted to, in that slightly sort of addict-y, alcoholic way, although, of course, I was not aware at the time that I was an addict or an alcoholic, I just wanted to jump straight in. And I remember raiding my mum's contact book. I mean, I can't believe how precocious I was, Daisy. It's, like, embarrassing, because I could never be like that now. I remember raiding her contact book and asking people for work experience, because I remember her saying to me, what makes you think that, you know, you're any better than any other 18-year-old who wants to go into journalism? And I was like, nothing. I don't think I'm any better than anyone. But, you know, I would be stupid not to use these contacts. So I ended up getting like a month's work experience at the Express, which at the time was very short staffed, this was like the late 90s. And I was doing like research for like the sports desk, the politics desk. I was just like helping out, like proper work experience. And then it sort of went from there. I remember like throwing some ideas out. I mean, I feel really like embarrassed talking about it now, but I suggested, I can't even remember now, but there was like some teenage issue. And I was like, I'll write about that. And they were like, actually, yeah, that would be really good if you could. And then I ended up writing a sort of, I guess like a kind of, it was like a column basically for teenagers in the Express. So it was all like really random. Like there was no, like that certainly wasn't what I'd gone in there expecting. And so I carried on doing that, carried on doing research for the lobby teams and the sports teams. I remember doing things like assisting people. I remember going to like Yeovil Town once to report on a football match or something. So there was like this real varied, I was like real kind of making tea, doing all those things that you do when you're doing work experience. And then what happened was the Telegraph at the time, I mean, this is like, we're talking like, this is like the dark ages, you know, so long ago. But the Telegraph at the time had they had a teenage section called T2. And
I remember.
Yeah. And they asked if I would write something about being a teenager. They'd obviously like seen this. And then from there, I sort of started doing more and more. And then a job came up as showbiz editor, which basically involved editing 4 pages of content on, you know, on like the latest teenage books and albums and movies out and, you know. And that, and I got it, which is bizarre. I was 19. It, you know, it's so mental.
I mean, that might still be my dream job.
Well, I remember like interviewing like Westlife and Craig David and being like, oh my God, this is amazing. And like getting to go to the Brits and all of that. Yeah, there was a bit of a, it was a bit strange. And then again, I mean, this was like, you know, I don't know if you remember the Mirror had, well, I think they still do have the 3 a.m. girls who were like columnists. And one of them left and they got in touch with me and were like, would you like to try out for this job? And I was, you know, I was not cut out for that at all, but I did. And I briefly, I mean, like we're talking for like 8 weeks, was a 3 a.m. girl before I realised I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. I was not cut out to like staying out late. And well, I was cut out to staying out late, but I wasn't cut out to like going up to celebrities, and I couldn't do it. And I quit. I ended up going on the trainee scheme at the Telegraph, and I'm sort of been on it ever since. And I remember, yeah, the trainee scheme, you were supposed to like go around departments, and I started on features. And they were like, we're going to keep you on features because someone's got on maternity leave and we need an extra body. And, you know, you can go in, we can rotate you onto news in a bit. And I'm still on features, you know.
And you never left.
I never left. And so that's basically how I got into the job. And it sounds like, you know, like, and I am aware of my privilege here, Daisy. Okay, so I'm not gonna, you know, I won't beat around the bush on that one. You know, I hope that I've proved myself and my ability, but also I hope that I've gone on to use the position I have to do good things, if that makes sense, and to lift other people up.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think it's really complicated to talk about. And I think that, you know, you're so right. And as I sort of, you know, it comes up a bit in careering that journalism is one of the, you know, there are quite a lot of areas in the sort of, you know, anything a bit creative and artsy where it's really, really hard. And if you have any kind of a way in, you've got to use it. And I mean, certainly, like when I was at Bliss magazine and I was in my 20s, but definitely still felt like a teenage fangirl. But I booked the like, work experience people coming in. And quite a lot of the time you get like their mums ringing up and sending the emails and doing all this. And that's when they're like, no, if they're not capable of putting themselves forward for this, then heaven help them when they get in here. When I read The Wrong Knickers, and you talk about living with your sister and another flatmate who I think I maybe met when we did that event together.
Yes, you did,
which is very exciting. I had a real fangirl moment, but you're talking about struggling to pay your bills and things being, you know, cut off. And I was another person where I was really, really, really ashamed of not earning any money. And I, you know, just the story I sort of told myself, like, well, it's because I'm bad with money. And I'd almost do things to prove it to myself. So I'd be very irresponsible with credit cards and things, and it was like a sort of, you know, self-shaming. Like, it was much better for me to feel like the architect of my own destruction than to look at the facts and say, I am not making enough money to live.
Yeah.
But I felt so alone in that because no one ever talked about it. And I was also doing where I thought, if I just double down, if I work twice as hard as I need to, surely they will pay me twice as much. And that's mad, I know. And I don't think I thought that as a fact, but I felt it as a feeling. And then reading you talking about, you know, living this life that I recognized, and it was a real, like, something shifted for me that was sort of enormous.
I think that, like, there is that weird kind of living two worlds thing where, yeah, I remember, as I was thinking about it, you know, talking to you and the Oscars have just happened, I remember there were a couple of years where I was, like, sent out to cover the Oscars, right? And, like, I was probably about 25, 26, and I remember, yeah, so you get on the plane and then they put you up in this like ridiculous posh hotel on Sunset Boulevard, and then you weren't forced at gunpoint, obviously. Like, I would go, they'd be like, oh, we set up these things so you can go and like live the life of an Oscars nominee. And I'd be like, it was mental. Like, literally getting your hair done in a place that it wasn't even like a month's, it wouldn't have even cost a month's wage. It would have cost like 6 months wage. Do you know what I mean? To afford to get my hair done at this place. And then like going, and I remember, I was talking about this to someone the other day. I remember like going to somehow getting an invite to the Elton John Oscars party, right? And it was, and I was like, I turned up and I was wearing like a really old Topshop dress that was probably falling apart, you know, like felt completely out of place because I was, but having to kind of pretend I wasn't. And I remember they gave us, everyone who went got these goodie bags, right? And the goodie bags, oh my God, Daisy, there were like these, at the time, very high tech noise cancelling Bose headphones, right? I remember being like, oh my God, I remember selling them on like eBay, because you know, that to me, that was like rent, do you know what I mean? And then I remember there was like this voucher from Kiehl's, and they were like, stop by our Rodeo Drive store and, you know, redeem this to the value of $1,000. And I was like, what? So I stopped by their Rodeo Drive store before I left Los Angeles, and I got all this Kiehl stuff, and that was literally Christmas birthday presents for like 2 years. Do you know what I mean? And it was this strange world, and I see it, and I think I always try and sort of like, that was what I thought I was supposed to do as a journalist, was like, it was about, well, no, it wasn't what I thought I was supposed to do as a journalist, but I realized I couldn't be that person. Like, I am not very good at being glossy and glamorous and holding my shit together at like a really glossy, glamorous drinks party. Do you know what I mean? And schmoozing. What I realized was that I was a bit of a, you know, in a way, I was a bit of a mess, and I sort of doubled down on that, really. And like, so I remember when I got to the age of about 20, you know, I'm not really realizing it, but, you know, but also journalism is a, you know, if you like a drink, journalism is a very good career to find yourself in. I mean, you'll always find people who like a drink in any industry, but, you know, it was part of the kind of whole job. And I loved journalists, and I loved listening to their stories, and I loved, you know, that sort of being in the thick of things. But I always took it that little bit too far with my drinking. My behaviour was quite shameful, and I would sort of spin it the next day in the office into like a hilarious anecdote, you know. Looking back, I was like, but, you know, they noticed that and were like, why don't you write a column about your crazy single life? And that was when, I remember when I rocked up, when I ended up in rehab and I was 37, I remember the lead counsellor there saying to me, you've turned your alcoholism into a career. Like, that's genius, Bryony. And I was really shocked. I hadn't ever really thought about it that way. And now I see that I like to justify my behaviour, or to kind of make it, no, not my behaviour, you know, I wasn't like killing anyone or anything like that, but like it became a sort of like, that was part of my brand, you know, crazy, silly Bryony. And it was only really when I really nailed into what was under that, right? And I find myself writing about the pain underneath it, the obsessive compulsive disorder that tormented me, that actually, weirdly, my career really took off. It went to a place that felt right, if that makes sense. I was like being, I hate this kind of phrase, but like authentically me, you know. I wasn't pretending to be something. I wasn't pretending to be the gregarious, fun party girl. I was like, actually, this is who I am. And I'm a bit of a fuck up, like most people, you know.
I was going to say, I think I heard you, Reggie, in an interview saying that you became more successful than you've ever been. And I think maybe you felt that way too when you started, get, you know, awkward word, but being authentic. And I think that for so many people, the relationship between alcohol and work is a really, really complicated one, because when you're young and you just want to sort of bond with these people as quickly as possible, and it's, I think, what these relationships are often built on. And I know that, you know, lots of people have that with their colleagues. I certainly did. And it seems sort of unfair as well, I think, that something as complicated as alcohol that affects us all differently, we're supposed to be able to push it absolutely to the limit and go no further. And we're so quick to judge people who struggle to find their limits and struggle to, you know, metabolize booze. And it's like, it's funny, isn't it, how one thing is a funny story and everyone has a good laugh and they think you're great, and then you just sort of dial that up a little bit further and then everyone's very cross with you.
Oh God, Daisy, I look back at my 20s. I don't know how I managed. Well, I do know how I managed not to get sacked, because I turned it into like a professional virtue, how I was behaving. But like, I don't know how I didn't die, you know, with some of the places my drinking took me. I think it's so interesting. You know, I've been thinking a lot about this recently, about how much of my career was about desperately trying to create some self-esteem or protect what little self-esteem I had, you know, which is why I think careering really resonated with me. And how much of it do I really want, if that makes sense? Because yeah, I think we go, you know, it's that, you know, you see it in your book, the main characters who go in and they're like, this is what I need to achieve. This is what I need to do. This is, you know, I need to get a column. I need to be the pundit on Good Morning Britain. I need to be, you know, I need to be getting the hits. I need to be, this is apparently what journalists do today. Do you know what I mean? And if I'm going to be a successful one, I have to do that. And then you know, you hit all those goals and you're like, ooh, is this really that enjoyable? Like, I think I'm at a stage in my career now where I have realised that, in a way, I started writing about my OCD kind of coming up for 10 years ago, and that in itself has been a process. And, you know, then very quickly realised that I had problems with alcohol and I needed to get sober and, you know, and that. But, like, I'm at a stage now, almost five years into being sober, where I'm like, I don't want to write about this stuff anymore. Like, firstly, I don't really have anything to say because my life is blissfully banal, you know. But I also don't like the kind of what I am the expectation of my job is, and I realize I'm in a really privileged place here as well, so I say all this, you know, and I want people to know, but I don't like that I need to be a brand, or I need to, you know, keep an eye on my Instagram following and engagement and all of that. Like, I find all of that really exhausting, and I realize that a lot of my career, a lot of my ambition in my career has come from a place of fear, you know, like, if I don't do this, I'm a failure. And people are going to somehow judge me. And I don't want to live like that anymore, you know. And a career is a long, long thing, hopefully, right? If we're lucky. Yeah. And it has so many different facets to it. And, you know, and I definitely, I don't really know what I'm saying. And that's okay, you know, like, I don't have to know. No, that's the thing. Like, I don't know what I want to do next or what, but I don't, you know, like, I feel very much ready to leave that part behind.
I mean, it's so complicated, isn't it? Because I know that all of your work and everything you've talked about sort of, you know, mental health and mental illness is very complicated, multifaceted thing that affects us all in all kinds of ways. You know, that the good that has done is incalculable.
But the good it's done for me as well, Daisy, because the whole reason I wrote about my OCD and all of that at first was because I needed to find other people like me. You know, it didn't come out of some sort of like, oh, I'm a martyr and an angel and I'm coming to, you know, help people. It was like I needed the help of the connection with other people. Like, when I wrote my first piece about the OCD, it was like, come and find me. Here I am. Do you know what I mean? And I couldn't have imagined how many people would come and find me. You know, like, everyone who has come and found me has made, like, it's been part of my recovery, Daisy. Like, no, like, and that's, you know, that's amazing.
I mean, the story I love so much is when you set up Mental Health Mates, which I'm sure listeners are aware, but it is a fabulous organisation of walks and meetups where people can come and, you know, and be together and sort of, you know, have communities, and there are different sort of regional chapters, and I'll put the link to find out more in the show notes. But when you first had the idea, and that I believe your husband Harry said, what if a load of nutters turn up? And you said, exactly.
That's the point. That's what I wanted to happen, yeah.
But I do think that it's a really, really fine line for all writers to try, and anyone who writes about their own life and themselves in a, you know, as you do, you write it well, and it's, you know, engaging, and I love your funny, beautiful sentences. And I think that, you know, writing about ourselves is so, so complicated. Honestly, I'm not sure that it's something that is in everyone's gift. I think lots of new writers, I think it's really good to have a sort of a grounding in journalism and writing about other people before you tackle you, and you're, you know, you're able to write for readers.
I have a complicated relationship with it. I mean, when I got onto social media.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah, with social media, I realize what I kind of started doing. I mean, I've never had a particular, like, plan, do you know what I mean, or anything. And I really needed to connect with people. And I really felt that social media was just this relentlessly positive kind of glossy place. And I think maybe what connected with people that was that I wasn't, do you know what I mean? But I, as I've always said, I like to show the bad things as well as the good things. But increasingly, I don't need to do that because I don't want to do that because in a way, it's like seeking, I mean, not in a way, absolutely, it's like seeking validation, you know. I'm okay as long as my 200,000 followers think I'm okay. And that's not, you know, that is not a kind of solid recovery base, do you know what I mean? Like, it can actually be a start, like, don't get me wrong. But I also know, like, I have a really funny relationship with social media now, do you know what I mean? Because I can, and then this comes personally from a place of, like, I am an alcoholic and an addict, and I can use it in a very alcoholic, addict-y way, you know, where I'm like, ooh, look, my followers are going up. They're going down. I am the worst person in the world, or my career is over, and I can't live like that. Do you know what I mean? That is not a reflection of other people on social media. That's totally my shit, you know, and that is where I can go with it. And I sort of don't like it. Do you know what I mean? I don't like feeling like that.
I have a fraction of the followers you have, and I really, really notice, because I've been, I suppose, doing a lot of work on how I eat and abuse food. And when I started sort of looking into that and figuring out the sort of, like, oh, I'm sort of abusing all of these different things on rotation and nothing to extremes, and I'm okay. No one's going to sort of call me out on, you know, any one thing being a massive problem. If I was just focusing on one thing, I would be in trouble. But this is just how people live, and are vaguely sort of bumbling along, dissatisfied. Oh, drank too much, ate too much, spent too much. What are you going to do? Way. And I really, really notice it. And I'm constantly like having to delete things from my phone and then sort of reinstalling them. You know, I'm promoting this book, Careering. Hooray! And there is sort of all of the, and I, this, gosh, this sounds like the most, for want of a better word, wanky thing to say in the world, but the sort of, you will promote this thing you've written, or you will promote this thing on, put it on your Instagram, put it on Twitter, and you sort of have to be like, yeah, sure, fine, of course, and it's expected of you, and you're like, I'm kind of on the wrong day. It's a bit like, and you will take this cocaine, won't you? Like, it's really,
yeah. It's a tricky one. And then I don't, you know, and also I don't think as right, you know, I've realized as you know, nowadays writers are also expected to be performers, and, you know, and we're marketeers, and it's all of that. And it's like, oh, I actually, sometimes I have to really sit down and go, no, Bryony, your job is to do what you have, like, you're write the book. And yes, obviously you will promote it, but actually that's, do you know what I mean? Really, that's the publishers. Mm. That's their job. And I've had to be really kind of like, because I can think the success is entirely down to whether I've done a good job. And I hate, promoting things. I hate promoting myself. Well, one might argue that social media is just one big promotion of oneself. But yeah, it's a very, like, it's quite I sound like such a whingy, like, people are gonna be like, oh, Bryony, it must be so terrible being you and having your jobs or your many jobs. But I have realized that I am, like, I, you know, you said at the beginning that I have lots of hats on, but I am happiest when I have, like, a base in journalism, so that I am doing other stuff that isn't about me. So, like, so, you know, I still have a job at the Telegraph. Well, I hope I do. I don't know. Like, it, you know.
At the time of recording.
I still have the time of recording where I go, I write a mental health column, which isn't really about my mental health. It's about life through a mental health lens generally, and about campaigning for better mental health provision on a Monday in the paper, which is great because it really does get me out of myself. And I, you know, I'm working on something at the moment about child mental health provision, and you know, it's that I really love that. That really like propels me forward because it's a really useful, helpful. Like I'm not, do you know what I mean? Like I'm being of service. That and that's essentially what I do. And then I go and I have an interview slot, so I go and interview people, and you know that in itself is also fascinating because just getting to spend time with fascinating people and reading about them and chatting about them and turning up and knowing more about them than they do, you know, kind of thing. And I find as long as I have that to kind of ground me and anchor me, you know, the rest of the stuff is all, you know, because I can go into like, oh, I should just be writing books, or I should just be doing this, or, you know, what am I? What is my career? What how would I describe myself? You know, I'm a flibbertigibbet, essentially. And I do a bit of everything, but like that's okay. Like if I was writing about myself the whole time, or it would be, you know, it becomes a sort of dangerous place to be. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be in my own head the whole time. It's like, God, it's exhausting in there, Daisy. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, that makes so much sense, and it's so resonant. And I often think when I'm really, really in the hole and struggling, and it's usually my ego getting in the way. And you know, you talked about fear, which was scarily sort of, you know, prescient, because that's the, it isn't that I go around thinking I'm a great success. It's more that unless I'm kind of an unequivocal success and everyone says so and everyone agrees, I think I'm a complete and utter failure. And I know that the way that my own sort of, you know, anxiety especially sort of manifests, it just makes me quite sort of self-obsessed in an awful way. And it's curiosity and gratitude every time that fix me.
But that is...
And I think that's what interviewing people does.
That is what anxiety is, though. So it's not something to be like, you know, like that's what, you know, it's... That is what it is. And I don't think it's anything to, you know, we mustn't judge ourselves for it. But I do, you know, I don't want to live, like I realize the career that I've chosen. And this is probably true for a lot of people, like careers generally. Like, you know, it's interesting that in my career, I write about mental health, but I don't think that I work in a particularly mentally healthy way. You know, because I am like, yes, I'll do that. Yeah, I'll do that. Doesn't matter that I now won't have time to pee or go to sleep, or do you know what I mean? Like, of course I'll do that. Yes. Or, you know, or I find myself working like all week, or, you know, like not everyone works all week, but like I'm weekends and do you know what I mean? And I'm just not having boundaries, as you say, like, and I'm having to. You know, as I get older, I realize I have to change that, because otherwise I will just collapse, you know. And I've got a family, and I've got, you know, and I want to enjoy that. I want to go swimming. I'm lucky that I've managed to like turn a bit of the things I, you know, I'm really lucky that my career basically involves doing a lot of the things I love. You know, like I'm about to embark on a crazy challenge, which is to run 10 10Ks in 10 days to raise money for Mental Health Mates, but also to promote this venture that me and my friend Jada Cesar set up, which is Celebrate You, which is running for your head and your heart rather than, you know, for the way you look. So it's all about running, or, you know, exercising for everyone. And I love doing that. I love, like, that's one of the things I really enjoy, is like doing challenges and showing that this stuff, like life is for everyone. It isn't just for the people that are like, you know, really good at it, or who are really slim, or who are, you know, the strongest or the fittest or the whatever. It's like, it's all there for the taking, whatever your shape or size or body experience. And so I'm really lucky that I can do that, if that makes sense. But I also have to then draw a line and go, well, it's okay, Brenny, you can just do a run or go for a swim, and it doesn't have to be like work. You don't have to like turn it into a challenge to raise money for charity.
I'd love to talk about how work is like the one acceptable addiction under capitalism. It is the addiction we're all encouraged to have. And if one is a person where we use work and the validation it brings to numb ourselves, there are people queuing up around the block to exploit that and take advantage of it.
Yeah, it is. It is real, like, it's a real workaholism. And, you know, it's like anything. You kind of switch one for another, put down the alcohol, You know, but it's weird because when I was in my like active alcoholism, I was working really hard as well. Do you know what I mean? It isn't like, I think that it's really interesting. I get asked to talk at a lot of companies about mental health, and you know, you go in there and then you're like, and then you'll get a message from someone who works at the company afterwards being like, this place does not, like, it does not walk the walk, you know? And I think that is, I think we have to be really careful that we don't just talk the talk about mental health, that we really live it in our everyday lives and that companies really live it. Because I see that, you know, I see that it's really important to say, okay, well, if you want a balanced life, you can't expect to have a balanced life if you're working all night, every day, or all weekends. Like, that isn't, like, where is the balance going to come from? Like, you have to create it yourself. And I think the more we kind of stand up to that, the more stuff changes. But I remember, like, even just like 10 years, not even 10 years ago, it was when I first set out Mental Health Mate, speaking to someone who worked at a big bank. And he was like, oh, I really like what you're doing. But he was like, it'll never, ever percolate into the city, because, you know, and I was like, really? And of course, now you see that a lot of these companies do, like, you know, they've partnered with mental health charities and whatever. And I wonder, like, at the top, how many of them are burning out or have had to sacrifice. I wish more people would talk about the sacrifices they have to make to be quote unquote successful. You know, it was really important the other day to see Helena Morrissey call out her own, you know, superwoman mentality that she had put into the, and I don't blame her for doing this, but, you know, she has 9 children, she's a QC, I think, you know, and it was, you know, and say, actually, I was broken. Like, I was broken. And I wish more of us would talk about that. I think, actually, that the more professionally successful you are, probably the less happy you are.
I mean, that's huge. And I think in the way that, I don't know if this is a fair thing to sort of compare it to or not. So, you know, as someone who, I abused food, I changed the way I ate, my body changed. And there were good things and bad things about that. And there were things I didn't like about the changes. And that was always kind of in my head as someone who'd had, you know, been a disordered eater her whole life. I'd be like, oh, when I'm this, I'll be happy. But yes, no, I am happy. It's got nothing to do with this.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's it, that like careers are exactly the same. And you're like, if I blah, 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 I'll be happy.
Yeah. So when I say the more professionally successful you are, the less happy you are. Like, that's obviously a massive fucking generalization, okay? Because I'm sure there are people who are professionally successful who are totally happy and have got it right. But what I mean is, the more that you prioritize your, like, I think if the more you prioritize professional success over any other kind of success, the less happy you will be. And, you know, but I also caveat that by saying that, you know, we've all got to fucking pay the rent, do you know what I mean, and pay our bills. So, like, you know, it's a tough, can't be like, well, it's a really tough balancing act. But I do wish more people would talk about the balancing act and say, look, you know, like, I don't think it's any accident that when I probably was at my most successful career-wise, right, was go back, like, 5 years ago, right? And I had, like, 2017, I had, like, a number one best-selling book. I had just interviewed Prince Harry for my podcast. I was, you know, it was like, you know, I couldn't move for requests to do things and this, that, and the other, right? I was literally at the end of my drinking. Like, I was burning out, you know, and that was the year I rocked up in rehab. And sometimes I have to go, oh no, does this mean that being sober means I can't be successful anymore? And it's like, no, I can be, but it's like, I can't work like that. That's mental. Do you know what I mean? I can't live like that, where the only way I can sort of deal with I don't know. Like, so that's what I mean. It's a really complicated thing. And I think I wish we had different sort of definitions of success. The other thing is what I've learned from interviewing people, Daisy, is that most of the most quote unquote successful people out there, like people who've reached the like pinnacle of their careers. And so I'm talking about, you know, like people that I've interviewed, they're all fucking deeply unhappy. And they're all trying to like deal with some, I mean, this is a generalization, but I find that they're almost all trying to deal with some trauma that they experienced as a child, do you know what I mean? Or as a young person. You know, I think sometimes professional success is spurred by darkness, you know?
There are so many facets to that. And maybe one is, you know, doing what you do so brilliantly, which is try and, you know, take something dark and difficult and complicated and bring it to the light and find the we. But also, yeah, I do think that progress isn't linear, and we think that we can outrun something that we think that sort of certain achieve. I often think about I think it's possibly more in America, but maybe here as well, and sort of in the academic world, and this notion of like of tenure, that academia is really, really precarious. And if you get tenure, and that means you're like with a sort of prestigious university forever, and you get paid and you get a salary, and that I'm always seeking some creative version of tenure. And I'm just trying to make peace with the fact that that doesn't exist. And it's not like and the other thing is looking at all the other people. When I'm making myself very, very, very unhappy, it's the old compare and despair.
Yeah.
And I think that everyone else is sorted out and secure in themselves and sort of doing better than I am. And I feel like every single one of my perceived failures is sort of written on my forehead. I'm like, no, we're all shambling about and struggling and losing it and worrying. And I mean, at the end of last year, and it was difficult because 2021 was globally...
What was the point of that
hard
year?
Hard for us all. It's awful. In terms of my career stuff, I had a really good year and lots of lovely things happened to me. And at the end of the year, I made a list of my happiest moments and highlights and my favourite memories. A few involved work stuff. Most involved different delicious sandwiches I'd eaten and different birds I'd seen in the park and when I saw a seal in the sea. And again, it's gratitude.
It is. God, it all boils down to that, doesn't it? And I am immensely grateful for everything I've experienced and been able to experience. And I don't, you know, for a moment take it for granted. And I want to make that clear because I do sound like a very whingy, but I also, you know, I think it's really important to explore what is success and, you know, what's important. And it is those moments, you know, seeing a seal in the sea. Like, that was probably my top moment of 2021, you know, was being in Cornwall with my family and, you know, and going for a sunset walk one day and just like seals frolicking in the surf, you know.
I was going to say, is it the same seal? And somewhere that seal is on a podcast going like, oh my God, I mean, everyone thinks I'm this, like, you know, beloved seal and I'm struggling with the attention.
What they don't know is that while I was in that surf, I was desperately trying to get some fish and I was like, can everyone stop taking pictures of me? And yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, I don't think I'd really want to be a seal because, like, they have to live on some, like, rocky outcrops, you know, in the wind and the rain and the... But I would like... This brings me back to what I originally... But I would like a career that could somehow marry seal spotting and journalism. If anyone has any job opportunities... that you know, please do let me know.
I love that the sea is calling to you, and I love the idea of the mysteries of the deep. There's a really great documentary about Jacques Cousteau. I nearly said Steve Zissou, and I'm like, no, that's the film. That's what the thing is based on. It's really about how I believe, and I think other people might like write in and correct me with your Jacques Cousteau facts because I don't know what I'm talking about. But what he started off doing sort of ruined the sea and ruined the environment. And he kind of spent the second half of his career trying frantically to reverse the first half.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a really good metaphor for most people's careers. or life, just generally. Just life. I do firmly believe we spend the beginning of our lives getting fucked up and the end, the second half, trying to unfuck ourselves. Don't you?
I agree. And I think that's the perfect point to end our conversation. And before I go, I wanted to ask about your challenges or anything where you'd like people to get involved or anything you'd like to direct people to.
Oh, I mean, that's really the main thing I'm doing at the moment. So yeah, if you wanted to, it's raising money for Mental Health Mates so that we can support more WART leaders and grow up and get more walks all over the country. But that is all on my Instagram, really, which is at Bryony Gordon, I think. But it's nice just to chat to you and not, you know, not feel the need to promote myself. Although I don't have any books to promote, you know, or anything at the moment. They're all just there. I will do shortly, but, you know, we can do something else then, right?
Definitely. I'm very excited. And, you know, and I'm sure if there are any listeners who haven't read the brilliant, brilliant back catalogue.
People often ask me what order to read them in, like what order they came in. So there was The Wrong Knickers, then Mad Girl, then Eat, Drink, Run, then You Got This, then Glorious Rock Bottom, and then No Such Thing as Normal. And next is my first novel. But that's another conversation.
Are you allowed, do you have a title yet? Are you allowed to talk about it, or is it TBA?
It's called Let Down Your Hair. It's YA, and it's a retelling of Rapunzel, but it's all about body image. And actually, this is like, yeah, Rapunzel gets alopecia, which is something that I had I still have, which is obviously in the news quite a lot currently. I don't know where this is going out. So yeah, that's all her hair falls out. I'm just like telling you the plot now, and I'm really excited, but I've really enjoyed like writing that and exploring like what matters, you know, to us, you know, is it the stuff on the surface or is it the stuff underneath?
Before we go, I have one more question to ask you, which is, what does the phrase dream job mean to you?
My dream job would be one that it doesn't exist. One that marries seal spotting with writing. That's the dream job, right? Yeah. With a competitive pension packet thrown in.
I love it. It's out there. It's got to be out there.
If anyone's got one of those jobs, you know, I'll send my CV in.
Huge thanks to Bryony. I love talking to her, and every single one of her books has changed the way I think about life and how I manage my mind, as well as making me laugh. Please do read all her books if you haven't already, and we'd both appreciate it hugely if you consider sponsoring her upcoming set of 10Ks for Mental Health Mates. Details in her Instagram bio, and I will share them in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening to Daisy is Careering. The podcast is produced by Dale Shaw for New Alaska and hosted by Acast, with special thanks to Sphere. My novel Careering is published by Sphere and it's out now, available in hardback from all online bookshops, with a special signed edition available from Waterstones and in some independent bookshops. It's also available from Amazon, where you can find the ebook and the audiobook read by Celine Buckins and Joe Hartley. For now, I leave you with this from Anne Shirley by way of L.M. Montgomery. Oh, it's delightful to have ambitions. I'm so glad I have such a lot, and there never seems to be any end to them. That's the best of it. Just as soon as you attain one ambition, you see another one glittering higher up still. It does make life so interesting. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.